205, Michael Calhoun and Amy Marks Kors, and we are at your service on a Sunday here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. And, you know, pumpkin stuff. We just talked about Christmas. I just played, I don't know how many people were driving their cars and almost drove off the road because they heard Christmas music on the radio, our last segment. Yeah. But let's get to the holiday that's at least right in front of us. It's within sight. We can almost grasp it. It's Halloween, and pumpkins are all over the place.
The fall-a-day.
They're here already. Pumpkin beer, everything. I guess we're mid-September. Is that early? Is that the right time, the sweet spot, too early?
So here's how you have to decide if mid-September is too early or not. What's the temperature outside? If it's 60 degrees and you're in a sweater and jeans, embrace it. Embrace the football. Embrace the pumpkin. Embrace the bonfires. But it is sweltering.
Mm-hmm.
So now it feels too early.
And those pumpkin beers can be pretty high ABV or really spicy, or they're the perfect beer for like next to the fire when it's really freezing cold outside, not when it's 92, heat index of 95 in the middle of September.
Yeah. So, yeah. Are you a pumpkin fan?
I am. I love pumpkin.
So you like pumpkin anything?
Pretty much.
Do you like pumpkin spice lattes?
Yeah.
Ugh.
I know.
Those,
I'm
to
basic.
Me, no, I would totally, and I am like I said, if I like it, I like it. Like, I pride myself on liking like deep cuts of indie music, but I am the first to admit that I also love Coldplay. And I just really like Coldplay. And so the pumpkin, I would be okay. I would set my ego at the Starbucks store and walk in and order a pumpkin spice latte if I could. But I think it tastes like burnt, charred milk. It tastes burned.
Oh, well, that might be more of a Starbucks latte issue in general. I don't know. What do you think about pumpkins? Is it too early? Do you like pumpkin? Do you just hate pumpkin? And this is the worst time of year. 314-436-7900. Or if you're on a road trip, maybe through St. Louis and your phone's dead and there's a payphone at the gas station and you've got a quarter, give us a call at 1-800-925-1120.
And if you're calling from a payphone, let us know.
Oh,
that's
totally
awesome. That's a throwback. I didn't even know they had those anymore. So, well, speaking of things that are the worst, like the pumpkin spice latte, have you ever played, you know, tag football or beer league hockey? Like, I grew up playing ice hockey, and so I've played a lot of men's league, Sunday night league, beer league ice
hockey. Oh, that's
fun.
I'd have to learn how to skate properly before, non-embarrassingly on ice skates before I try that.
Okay, so then let's say softball, and there's always that guy who thinks he should have gone pro, and he tries too hard. Have you ever played against
that guy? And the hope is never gone to go pro. It never fully goes away. Even I watch the Olympics, and I see the swimming, and I'm like, you know, I could get back in high school shape in probably 6 months or so, right?
Nuclear fallout, I swear, will be cockroaches and the hope that you could still go pro in the sport of your choice. I swear that's what will be. It'll be the cockroaches and that guy. So there was an article in The New Yorker, and it's about the men who have taken wiffle ball to a crazy competitive place. Yes, wiffle ball. There is a wiffle ball league that has 10 to 20,000 active wiffle ball players where they have
10 to 20,000?
Yes, it's right. I believe more on the East Coast, and they have these semi-structured environments. And they say semi-structured, it sounds pretty darn structured to me. They have farm teams for these wiffle ball games. They're 5 innings long, 1 hour. A lot of times there's double headers. They don't have a catcher because it's wiffle ball. So there's like a plastic strike zone behind the batter that you have to toss the ball. It's a five ball walk, mm-hmm, instead of the four balls. These guys, they've hit a wiffle ball 230 feet. They're playing it like they're going pro. And they even modify the bats where they don't just use the plastic wiffle ball bats. They use Nerf bats, and they saw them in half and add wooden handles, which to me is cheating.
They're corking the bats.
They're corking the bats in wiffle ball. So,
what about the flip, though? The bat flip when there's a walk-off. Have they perfected that yet?
I'm sure they have. These guys are serious, and I believe there's 5 batters, but you have like no fewer than 3 batters, and they're playing these wiffle ball games. I've been there where I've played against that guy who is trying to prove to everyone that he should have gone pro, even though there's like dads with like five kids and like he brings his son who's 11. And then you have that guy who's like, I played one game in the ECHL. I could go pro. I'm like, well, not really. If you're playing with me, that's a bad sign.
What do they do? Are they like really aggressive in checking or where does it come in?
Really aggressive with checking. Even like the way they shoot, like there's kind of an understanding that you're not taking these giant slap shots in this like dad league or even fights. Like they'll drop the gloves and want to throw punches. And the guy's like, dude, I got to go to work tomorrow. like we're not.
Has anybody had to go home and figure out the makeup around like a black eye from the hockey game the night before the big sales pitch tomorrow?
So here's the embarrassing confession that I have. When I was young, like teenager, I was that guy.
You were like, yeah, let's do it. Come on.
So I wanted to be a football player back in the day when I was like 12. Huh. This was the Rich Brooks, Tony Banks era of Rams football. Mm-hmm. And I was that guy that I would play football with the neighborhood kids and it would be tag football or touch football.
Okay. No flags.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think we weren't that refined. It was like a group of neighborhood kids who just go play in a field. So it was like two touch football. And I would occasionally tackle someone and they'd be like, dude, come on.
On the grass or on the pavement?
On the grass. Okay, it was at least in a field. I want to say that like 60%, like a tackle guy, 60% respect, 40%, what are you doing? But that was probably just me being wrong.
Do you have a story like this? Give us a call, 436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Michael and Amy on a Sunday with you on At Your Service. And Cindy's calling in to talk about pumpkin stuff. Cindy, have you seen it in the aisles of Schnucks or wherever you grocery shop?
Yes, it's everywhere. And I love pumpkin, but we're in apple season right now. They're picking apples. So where's all the apple, like apple anything, apple cinnamon, apple spice? They can have all kinds of fun things with apple. I don't usually start doing pumpkin stuff till around Halloween. And then you have till at least Thanksgiving, and then you can, if you go to Starbucks, you'll either gain 10 pounds and you'll go broke in a pumpkin latte every day there. QT has pumpkin stuffed pretzels right now.
Really?
Oh, I don't.
Really?
Mm. Like they're sweet, like cinnamon.
Yeah,
Sean Connery.
And but, you know, they have those now. I looked and went, are you serious? So I love pumpkin. But I think we're pushing things way too fast.
Have you ever had pumpkin in a pie before, Cindy?
I make pumpkin pies, but not right now.
Now it's apple pie season. Cindy makes an excellent point. The apples are being overlooked.
Oh, totally. And, you know, Eckert's, speaking of Lou Fest, they had like tens of thousands of apples that they were going to be giving away at Lou Fest. And so last weekend, Eckert's was out at Carondelet Park and they went to the City Museum and they literally just had boxes of apples. If you want one for free, come and get it because we have a million of them.
Oh, wow.
So it is apple season. Cindy's right. Thank you for calling in, Cindy. If you want to talk about anything pumpkin or anything apple, I guess, or if you want to talk about that guy on your rec sports league, give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
And you may also not like pumpkin, but perhaps Michael, do you like locusts or silkworm pupae? And you're laughing.
Oh man. I don't know how to answer that.
There was a New York Times article that came out entitled How and When to Cook with Bugs.
Here's what I think would play in my head as I try it. No. But although Gringo, the restaurant, the Mexican restaurant that's opening near the convention center, is going to have, they had it in the Central West End, their original location, Cricket Tacos.
Yeah.
Feel the crunch.
That would be difficult. I think I've had a cricket in a cricket, probably multiple crickets. I've had multiple crickets.
Sometimes I go out to mow the lawn, I feel like I'm farming crickets.
No, they're aggressive too, and they kind of hurt when they hit you. But no, here, the New York Times came out with an article, locusts simmered in soy sauce. Here is the first and second step. One, boil the insect for 1 minute and drain in cold water. Two, tear off the legs, which are tough and hard to chew. Then they had a recipe for silkworm pupae. Soak the dried silkworm in a this following mixture to rehydrate. Their third recipe was charred avocado tartare with escamoles. I think that's how you say it, which is ant larva. Maybe it's just Escamole. Escamole?
They need a pronouncer on these
Escamole.
Things.
Escamole. Yeah. It's ant larva. I would, no way. No way. Ant larva?
No. I don't even like coconut, Amy. I don't like mushrooms, so.
What would you do if you were stuck on an island? A deserted island and all you had was coconut?
Well, I'd get hungry enough, I guess, at some point.
I guess so.
It would have to be, I don't know, it's the, I don't like coconut candles. Never liked Almond Joys.
I do think coconut, maybe it's like the fatty content, but it can get rancid.
Well, we've got some phone calls coming in. Danny, Kathy, hang on. If you've got a rec league story or you just hate everything pumpkin or you're so excited it was the best day ever when you saw the pumpkin beer at Schnucks, give us a call. 314-436-7900. Michael and Amy at your service on a Sunday afternoon on KMOX.
History is being made. And you're hearing it here. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. KMOX.
You and I in a little toy shop. Buy a bag of balloons with the money we got. Set them free at the break of dawn. Till one by one, they were gone.
220, welcome back to At Your Service on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Amy Marks-Kors, Michael Calhoun with you. And coming up in just a little bit, you don't need 99 red balloons to get into space anymore. You just have to hop on the elevator and hit floor 1,000? I don't know.
2,000 maybe?
I don't know.
I guess it depends on how big the floors are.
We'll have to find out. That's conversation is coming up, but right now we're talking about rec sports leagues and that guy. That guy.
That
Let's
guy.
Go to Danny on line one. You're on the Voice of St. Louis. What's your story, Danny?
Oh, I'll tell you what. So I'm a 42-year-old guy that still plays baseball in a local rec league. And the reason I play is to help me convince myself that I'm not as old and fat and out of shape as I am. And some of these other guys that play, they really take it to another level. Last season, in my first at-bat, I got a double off a guy and drove in a run. And in my second at-bat, the guy purposely drilled me with like a 75-mile-an-hour pitch in my left knee. Okay.
What?
And so I am not kidding. And so I went down. Like when Yadier Molina and Matt Carpenter, when they get hit, it looks awesome, right? They're tough. It looks cool.
For You're me, like, yeah, first like, base.
I had to go to the doctor. I mean, it hurt so bad I had to go to the doctor.
Wow.
You know, and when I'm laying, I'm sitting on the ground, and I look at the guy, and he scowled at me, and I swear he said, I have to protect my team.
What?
Are you serious?
Protect my team. Like, I have to protect my job. I mean, what is wrong with you? I mean, yeah, I had to actually go to the doctor. My knee swelled up so bad. That is like rec league maximum.
Oh, that's the worst.
This guy, he should go back to his mom's basement, and whatever he does with his life is what he should be doing.
He has to protect his team. He must be getting paid a lot more than all the other rec players.
Does he think he's Bob Gibson? My gosh.
No.
I hope there was a bench clearing brawl.
Maybe. I don't know.
I've
Let's
been
go
in
to
a few of those.
Kathy, you play women's basketball. What's your story?
Yeah, so kind of, I've also had a softball story, but I'll tell you the basketball one. I used to play women's basketball in a league down in northern Arkansas. I'm from St. Louis, but I was down there for about 14 years. And it was something to do, right? So in the evenings, and we'd have our little league play. And some of these girls, I had played AAU basketball and competitively when I was growing up, but I was, you know, back then, that was quite a few years ago even, but there were people that had played in college, and the women, when the refs would turn their back, they'd be pushing you out of the way and pushing off and cheap shots, and I found myself just doing the same thing because otherwise you're going to get beat up.
So you joined, if you couldn't beat the bad guy.
You got to join him.
You joined him.
That's right. And yeah, and it was like, it kind of reminded me when I used to play in high school, because at some of the schools it got pretty rough and the refs couldn't keep up with the fouls. So you just, if you can't beat them, join them.
What about softball? What's the story from there?
Yeah, it made me think here in Danny, before my call, my daughter didn't play competitive softball, but she did play some, and she was a pretty good athlete. And not too many years ago, she was on a co-ed team. And when I'd go watch, I was concerned for her because those guys, sometimes they would drill the ball when they were throwing it, and she would be on first base or whatever. And I do think they just lose sight of what age they are and that it's supposed to be for fun and all that good stuff. But there was times I wondered, I think even her boyfriend at the time, this is bizarre, told us that, well, let me qualify it. She doesn't date him anymore, and I'm kind of glad because this kind of tells you where it's at with that. He was so competitive that one time he was having some kind of medical procedure done. He didn't want to miss a softball game, so he brought his ID bag to the softball field.
Oh, my gosh!
And I didn't need to see this, but I thought, okay, I think you've lost perspective here.
Was it a beer league? Was he standing at second with the, you know, the red Solo cup in one hand and the IV in the other?
Was it Bud Light in the IV? Like, maybe it was right. Just alcohol.
Maybe that's what they were talking about, but no.
Oh, man.
No, he actually didn't drink that much. So, anyway, yeah, it gets kind of crazy. I think people just, something comes over you if you have that competitive streak. Because I also coached girls basketball for a number of years, and I had to kind of remind myself that this is just, you know, kids playing a basketball game.
But what do you recommend to the kids? Do you say, hey, just close your eyes and take a deep breath? Or what's the best technique if you're like, oh my God, I'm that guy in this game, how do I calm down? What's your advice?
Well, I think you have to recognize it in yourself. And I think sometimes you recognize it in other people. Maybe if you're at a game and you just have to, it's kind of like, you know, alcoholics, if you don't realize you don't have a problem, you're not going to fix it. But anyway, I didn't go over the top or, you know, berate any kids. I do remember, though, and it's kind of on topic, I guess. There was a soccer game. My daughter played a lot of competitive soccer, and we were at, it was like traveling teams and all that. And it wasn't one of our games, but there was a little girl that had a haircut that she was a really cute little girl, but I guess you could see that she might look like a boy. And one of the parents challenged that it was a boy playing on a girl's team and made the refs pull the cards, their ID cards, and it was a little girl. And I just thought, I mean, everybody was just beside themselves that that was going on. And he was wrong, this parent or coach that challenged it. And the next day he brought the little girl some flowers. But I thought, I don't know if you can fix that.
Yeah, that's tough to backpedal on that one.
Yeah.
And she made a bunch of really good points, especially bringing up the co-ed challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it gets serious.
You got to temper yourself.
I've played in a hockey game before where it's a lot of hockey games are co-ed or even like broom ball. Broom ball is a big sport on the ice rinks in the summer. And a girl played broom ball and she scored. And another guy didn't like the fact that a girl scored and he slashed her across the hand.
Oh.
Broke her hand.
What?
Yes.
That guy better not have played again.
In a co-ed broom ball league. It's
Jeez.
Ridiculous.
No, that is ridiculous.
And I've also had teammates who've had to go to court to testify against somebody because they considered it assault with a weapon, a hockey stick.
The dark underside
of
intramural sports. Jeez.
Of beer league sports.
Well, it's 2:28. If you want to get in on the conversation, anything we're talking about here, Michael and Amy on At Your Service on KMOX, the number is 436-7900, or if you're by a payphone, 1-800-925-1120. And let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about this Japanese space elevator experiment. Sounds pretty cool. We'll be back in a moment on KMOX.
Japan is getting ready to launch a space elevator next week. People have talked about this for years. For years, they dreamt about having this connection somehow that we could just take things from Earth to outer space with very little effort. And they are going to have a space elevator next week. However, we do need to mention that it is not going from Earth to the International Space Station. It will be these two cubic satellites that they're calling CubeSats. And they're going to launch them into space. Now, they're small. Each CubeSat is 4 inches on each side. And they're going to launch it along with a steel cable that is about 33 feet long. And they are going to connect that cable on the space station to, like, another satellite and be able to transfer things basically within space, laterally.
So does the steel cable go down to the ground, too?
And then it doesn't.
It comes up?
That's the dream. That's the ultimate hope.
So, that is the dream. That's my dream.
That's the dream. To me, it feels like a long stretch because it's this, it's Shizuoka University in Japan. They are the ones that are saying, okay, let's prove that we can get an elevator working in space.
I mean, with the rotation of the Earth, wouldn't it like rip it out of the ground?
Well, I think that's why this is such a space-breaking, groundbreaking.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Atmospheric breaking
experiment, because they want to prove can they shuttle these CubeSats back and forth on this cable. Now, this Tokyo-based Obayashi Corporation, they actually want a space elevator by 2050, where you can just follow a steel cable from the Earth up into space.
I wonder what the elevator, you know, the term elevator pitch. Or like people elevator conversations. How long is that elevator ride?
It's like a Harry Potter novel.
You know, do people just stand there with their hands in their pockets looking at the ding as you go up and talk? Or do they talk to each other? Is everybody on their phones for the entire 20-minute elevator ride?
I don't think it would be people. I think what they want is supplies for like the International Space Station.
Okay.
And they want a place where they can just take waste down from the International Space Station and then send water and food and tools up.
Okay.
It seems like a long shot to me. Seems like maybe that this 33-foot cable, if that's groundbreaking, then maybe we're not quite at the ground to ISS yet. Well, we're not at that point yet.
It's funny how Elon Musk, like the exact opposite, wants to do rockets where if you're flying to Japan, you don't have to sit on a plane for 12 hours. He'll just put you on the top of a rocket that goes up and then down and lands you right in the middle of, you know, it's like a 10-minute space flight.
So would you do that? Are you a space guy?
When I was in like elementary, middle, high school, loved space. Apollo 13 was like my favorite movie. So totally. Absolutely.
If you could go right now.
Right
spaceship.
Now, go out to the elevator in the kitchen.
Yes,
and they, call it down.
Well, just like you want a coupon from the blimp at the Blues game.
Ah.
And one of the coupons is to like take a ride in an F-18, right?
Yeah.
The other coupon is to go to space in the space shuttle. Would you do it?
I think I'd choose the space, yeah.
Really?
Over
no
the,
way. You
couldn't, the fighter jet, yeah.
You couldn't pay me enough money to go to space.
Seriously, why?
I get motion sickness.
Oh, well, I think that would probably be a part of it for me, too. But I think the astronauts even deal with that. So.
I mean, I felt far away from home when I went to Australia a couple of years ago. And that was almost too much. I was too far away from home. I can only imagine what it would be like to be able to see Earth.
I haven't been on a flight that long.
It was 17 hours from Dallas to Sydney. Yeah.
Jeez.
I don't know. I feel like.
And you had to go through Dallas.
I had to go through Dallas.
Back to our convo from earlier.
Yeah.
Speaking of the future, this is like a little bit of foreshadowing from September 14th, 1995. Hey, that's almost this date back in the mid-90s.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. It is. It's like an anniversary, a 23-year anniversary.
Kind of a dark anniversary here. But this is from CNN, Dateline Osaka, Japan. Some telecommunications experts fear that the multimedia revolution. I think at the time, multimedia revolution probably referred to, what, CD-ROMs?
Yeah, MS-DOS.
Yes. Well, it's setting the stage for the eventual breakdown of society. It's a gloomy forecast at a debate of the Conference of the International Institute of Communications that took place back in 1995. An American lawyer said that HE double hockey sticks is a loss of privacy, and nothing brings us closer to that in telecommunications technology, because we're all going to wind up consumers with no privacy in a technological world with no protections.
I mean,
and meantime, we just had these hearings on Capitol Hill with Facebook and Twitter there.
And they call this breakdown of privacy, this technological world with no protections, a breakdown of society.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, I mean, look at the social impact and ramifications that constant connectivity, global connectivity and instantaneous broadcasting of anybody's thoughts.
Yeah.
It has revolutionized the globe.
Well, it's
and
like
humanity.
If you think about, I remember turn of the 2000s and shark attacks were all over the news. And it was, is it really more shark attacks or is it just more attention? And these days, so much of like all the airline incidents, I wonder if those are new, if we are really more on edge and just prone to irritability, or if everybody just has cell phones now. And so we know that these things happen because of that fact.
Well, and the article goes on to say that he said religious, linguistic, and tribal conflicts throughout the world have been started and fueled to some extent by the spread of telecommunications, which he said can easily promote sensationalism and propaganda.
Oh, wow.
Back in 1995, he was calling this.
I was just at the National Election Security Summit this week, and I actually have this this cut here from the Undersecretary of Homeland Security, Christopher Krebs, talking kind of about propaganda and sensationalism being the biggest threat.
We continue to see Russian actors attempt to sow discord, divisiveness, and just create rifts between the American public. And that that remains a problem right now.
So it's not necessarily that your vote's going to get hacked on election day. Now, there are some vulnerabilities with like the registration database. But the big concern that the feds have and the intelligence that they're sharing with local authorities is about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Misinformation and propaganda.
So this is also an age-old tactic, is to divide countries. It's just now that we have this immediate access to an entire nation that you can broadcast. But I was doing some light beach reading this summer. Mm-hmm. I was reading Thomas Paine's Common Sense. And at the beginning of it, he devotes a whole paragraph to what we would call fake news. And he says the king has no limit to the printers who have no scruples, basically printing propaganda and what he called dividing the continent. He was afraid, this was in his Common Sense, saying that the colonies need to stick together because the king, he was afraid the king was trying to divide the continent with his no end of unscrupulous printers.
So did this really begin with the advent of Facebook and Twitter, or did we get ourselves into this with the invention of the printing press?
Of the pamphlet.
Way back when. Back in the day, you know, there'd be like five newspapers in a town.
Yeah.
And they'd all have different points of view. People talk about the Spanish-American War, I think, which was, prompted by newspaper report. I'll have to double check on that.
Well, and just to the pamphlet enabled people to get their information and their convictions for the American War for Independence. Like, I think the more I study history, the more I'm like, wow, the pamphlet really went a long way. I think the pamphlet was the old Facebook.
The blog is the new pamphlet, right?
That's right.
Everything that's old, nothing is new.
That's
everything
true.
Just
nothing
repeats itself, but with new technology, right?
That's right.
I wonder what's the historical connection to Uber drivers live streaming you in the back of the car.
Oh, that's just like probably somebody super chatty on the Pony Express.
who writes a tell-all book about the Oregon Trail.
Yes.
The stories you didn't play on the video game
more
in middle school.
More than just dysentery. The dirty stories of the Oregon Trail. The salacious stories of homesteaders.
Man. Well, if you are still with us, at your service, Michael and Amy. And coming up, we're going to talk about my car broke down a few weeks ago, and I tried to use Metrolink and scooters and Lime bikes to get home. How did that work out for me? We'll talk about that coming up. And then also, what happens when a chameleon looks in the mirror?
What?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't either. Who thought of that? That's a great question to ask, though.
That's the kind of research that's happening all across this country. We'll talk about that coming up. It's 2:42 on KMOX. Michael Calhoun and Amy Marks-Kors with you at your service on a Sunday afternoon.
There ain't no man can't save me. There ain't no man.
You know what didn't save me when I was dealing with my car in the shop?
What was that?
Well, so I took an Uber to work, or no, I took it home the first night my car was in the shop. And it was like a $25, $30, you know, I'm sure it would have been about the same if I had taken a taxi. So I thought, all right, I will take Metrolink home.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nearest stop to my house, it says it's maybe a 45-minute walk, but there are Lime bikes around there. These scooters are so cool. They're
right.
all over the place. I see people on them all the time. That'll be, I'll do that to get home.
Yeah, because 45 minutes is a pretty long walk.
Yeah.
If you can get on wheels.
Yeah, cut so much time off of there. Or if worse comes to worse, I'll just get like a lift from the Metrolink station to my house. Luckily, my car was not in the shop for more than a few days. But so I took a Metrolink. It was like 11:30 p.m. I walked to the downtown Civic Center station. So it was a few days after the shooting at the Grand Metrolink stop,
right.
The bus stop there. And, you know, there was some single tracking. There were some, you know, construction issues that were going on. So I had to wait there for, you know, maybe 20 minutes. And then I had to transfer from Red Line to Blue Line at Forest Park. And then I get to my station and I get off and I start walking. And there's not a Lime bike for like 25 minutes. But finally, I get to a Lime bike. I unlock it with my phone. It's like a dollar, I think, was the total charge to ride the bike home. It worked out just fine. Now, last night I was out downtown with some friends and we were looking around for scooters just to, I don't know, have fun, drive, you know, go around the Arch grounds, check out downtown, try the scooters. Could not find one. Makes me wonder if your daily commute, if you're thinking, I live walking distance or so to work, I'll just take the scooters every day. We couldn't find one.
Okay.
For like a half hour.
A couple of things, and we'll get back to the unreliability of being able to locate your mode of transportation, which sounds like a big issue, a big logistical nightmare if you can't find your mode of transportation. So how long did it take you to get home that day by the time you waited for the Metrolink, switched lines, and then walked 25 minutes to find?
Oh, that, well, the walking and the having to wait for the train to come made it close to a little bit more than an hour and a half, I think.
So at that point, wouldn't you have paid $30 just to get home? Do you know what I mean? Like,
at the that point,
$30 trade-off.
That becomes a question. Although that's not sustainable every day.
It's not, but neither is a 90-minute ride home,
Mm-mm.
trip home.
Not when it's usually 15 minutes. Now, if the construction hadn't been happening, I mean, I think about the people who are coming in for the Forest Park balloon race and Schlafly Hop in the City and everything over the weekend, and the bridges are closed.
And the bridges are closed.
And you get stuck in traffic. People have, you know, 45, 50 hour and a half long commutes when they're on the highways. Too. At least when you're in a train car, you can be on your phone, you can read, you can send emails, you can get work done. An hour and a half is a little excessive, I think, but if it were shorter than that and I had a stop near my house that I could walk to and I didn't work weird hours that maybe had me here until 1 a.m. some nights when the trains aren't running, I would consider it just because of that convenience factor of you just hang out on the train.
So how long, if you were to just drive, how long would your commute home be?
15.
That's a hard trade-off.
Which
for
I
me.
Love.
15
I
minutes.
I don't think
to
I could drive more than 15 minutes.
Right, but then to go to an hour and a half taking public transportation, that's where something needs to be ironed out, where the city would need to figure it out, because that's just not feasible.
Well, and if maybe there were Lime bikes that were stationed at the station, I could have hopped on a bike or a scooter immediately and been home in 10 minutes.
So that's another thing. I was at the Forest Park Visitor Center yesterday morning, and I had been running in Forest Park and decided, you know what? I don't want to run the 2.5 miles home. I'm going to hop on the nearest Lime bike or Lime scooter.
Mm-hmm.
This entire summer, I have almost been drowned, run over, and tripped over this abundance, a superfluity of Lime bikes and Lime scooters. And wouldn't you know, yesterday, there was not a single Lime bike or Lime scooter in sight.
I couldn't find one either.
Where were they?
Well, I mean, I saw them. Everybody just had them already. And I walked up to it. I went to like at least 10 of them, and walking from the Arch to Tucker and back looking for one. And people are either on them, or I walked up to one, the battery's almost dead, or I walk up to another one and there's a guy saying, hey, I'm with maintenance, I'm taking this one in to be charged. Or I walked up to a couple and there are already groups of people there saying, oh, we're about to check these out. So,
and I had a friend too last night, the same, you know, same weekend in Soulard. And they were going to ride scooters home. They had counted on that as their mode of transportation. And every single scooter they came across, the battery was dead.
Oh, so the birds have that problem. I think the Lime scooters are usually pretty well charged.
Okay.
But apparently, the weekends are like this if you're looking for a scooter. But if it's a weekday and it's 8 a.m. or 5 o'clock at night, apparently there's not much of a problem finding them. There are just so many of them that, especially, you know, with all the events that have been in the city, everybody's walking around, you know, with wristbands on from whatever event they went to. I just think there was a crush of people downtown yesterday.
So what do you do then, though, if you decide, hey, let's Lime scooter or Lime bike to the Cardinals game? Do you pretty much have to know that you might have to Uber back?
I think so, yeah.
There's no guarantee you're getting back, because, or even a bar. If you ride a Lime bike to a bar, you can't think, oh, well, I'll have a couple of beers and Lime bike back.
People try to hide them.
Do they?
They will bring them. There was one, I won't say what building it was in, but I'm walking around and I'm like, the pin is right here. Where is this? Oh, the pin's on the other side of the building wall. Somebody must have taken it to work and brought it inside the building and is hiding it from me.
I mean, that's kind of smart, kind of illegal probably, but also kind of smart. Yeah. It's not easy to hide a bike.
Mm-mm. Well, I just wonder once we, getting back to the autonomous cars conversation, like if you watch a show like Black Mirror, in the future, 20 years from now, people might not even get their driver's licenses, and it'll just be as easy as pressing a button on the phone and a car with no driver and, like, you know, four seats that face each other, kind of like a transit car pulls up and you just get in and punch in your destination, and it moves on. And that'll be so much cheaper because there won't be a driver. I mean, this is what the futurists are saying, you know, transportation is going to be like. And in Black Mirror, it's funny. The older police detective is like, oh, you know, where'd you park your car? And the younger new police detective says, oh, I never got my license. The car's on the way. And the older one rolls her eyes, says, you know, you don't even know how to drive.
But are we that close? You saw Back to the Future. They like way overshot the mark of where we would be by now, which is funny because they have the flying cars, right? Mm-hmm. Jetson style, but they still have a phone booth. Like, he still had to go into a phone booth. They could envision the flying cars, but...
Well, that's if you got to call an 800 number.
I guess it is.
You got to look for the phone booth. I see phone booths, so I just don't see any phones in them these days.
Yeah, they're just for the proverbial
just all rusted
stick
out.
Handling. So you can stick handle in a phone booth. They got to have those around so that hockey players can still use that metaphor.
Oh, hey, we are almost out of time on this Sunday afternoon, but Amy, I really need to know the answer to this question. What happens when a chameleon looks in the mirror?
Well, it's a good thing that National Geographic is asking the hard-hitting questions, because they did ask that question, and what they found out is that male chameleons tend to get emotional, and when they get, because they see themselves as a rival, and so they change colors from noticeable hues of yellow and orange to even red.
So they don't recognize it's them. They see another chameleon that could be a threat.
They see a rival. There's not enough study on what the female chameleons would do. The female chameleon is apparently much more mysterious than the male chameleon.
Interesting. So the male chameleon changes colors. Gills like pop out. Does it start hissing? Or is this like a Jurassic Park dinosaur kind of reaction? You remember from the first movie when Newman.
Yes, although I picture you're talking of Jurassic Park, and all I'm thinking of is the alien from Spaceballs when he comes out and he's like, hello, my baby, hello, my doll, and hello, my ragtime.
That's what the female chameleon does.
That's what the female chameleon does. No, the male apparently just, he gets a little emotional, gets a little worked up, and can turn red.
Okay.
Yeah. I just think it's good that somebody, that the best minds in science.
Yeah, who did this research?
National Geographic.
Who paid for this research? Okay.
Who is that? Oh, University of Texas, El Paso.
All right.
I think they were the Taco Tuesday
UT.
People.
They're hitting
it.
All of
they
the societal ills
now,
these days. Chameleons and tacos. All right, two of my favorite things, right?
Yeah, I agree. I like it. But yeah, hopefully we get more hard-hitting questions like this.
Yeah. Well, it's been a lot of fun. Last 2 hours, Amy.
It was I had a blast.
Me too. This is the first time I've done this. So, a little nervous going in. Thanks for making it easy.
Well, go drink your pumpkin spice latte.
I got a newscast to get together.
Oh, that's right. I'll bring you one.
Thanks for joining us. And he's about to stab the brain and this hunger. I'm feeling something.